This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Back, talking about Peter the Great, Catherine the Great, and all of these other historic figures. St. Petersburg, we're talking about Russia, Moscow, all of these capitals. Today, in the parlance of many people in mass audiences, they really don't mean much. They are meant to mean whatever it is the media want them to think of them at the particular moment. And as we know, with hostilities growing and on the world stage, all of this being orchestrated, again, by the same people that I guess Frank Britton identified in his book, Matt, Behind Communism, many years ago. We know that there is a hidden hand of tyranny. There is a hidden, invisible government, as we alluded to earlier. So the thing is, if we don't know who they are scripturally, and we don't know what they are, what their end game is, then we'll never be able to figure out this matrix. You know, you hear people say, yesterday our friend, today our enemy, tomorrow our friend, tomorrow our enemy. And they don't understand the geopolitics behind it and what really drives the geopolitics, you know. We're here to try to bridge some of those gaps and bring forth some academic intelligence. And I think you do a superb job of bringing understanding to it in an academic and entertaining sense as well. So let's continue. With what you were just saying about the influence of these monarchs, so-called, in Russia, and how they were sabotaging Russia from within, laying the groundwork for what was to come.
Well, you know, the law is very clear. You know, to be a Russian emperor or czar, you have to be Orthodox. And Peter, of course, had repudiated Orthodoxy. His so-called wife didn't know where she was most of the time. And Catherine II was very much an Enlightenment liberal. Now, the 19th century, you know, monarchs like, you know, Nicholas I and Alexander III, Nicholas II, attempted to repair that damage. And they went very far to do it. But there was always this split between Petersburg and the rest of Russia. I mean, Moscow is the capital. And in separating Russia from Moscow, you know, a new ideology had come in. And when Peter the Great went to Amsterdam, did his great tour of Western Europe, he was, and this, his mainstream biographers all say this, he was brought into Freemasonry, in Amsterdam itself by actually a British lodge there. And then he flooded the country with Masons and surrounded himself with foreigners. And the attacks on Tsar Nicholas, the attacks on Rasputin especially, came from the Supreme Council of Russian Freemasonry. And they had two newspapers, Slovo and the Russian Word. And they made, actually, it was the Masonic Congress in Brussels who said, let's use Rasputin as our main guy, because we can't attack Nicholas. Let's use him. Now, as I said before, the revolutionary government created the emergency inquiry. And they had Duma evidence. They had all the papers of Tsar Nicholas. And here's what they concluded. The quote is, all pamphlets and newspaper articles on the subject of Rasputin's influence and other rumors and gossip were fabricated by powerful enemies of the emperor. And that comes from and under the seal of the Attorney General of the High Commission. And this was Kerensky's people. So it was all mythology. Everything, mythology, you know, runs the 20th century. Everything that people think of a 20th century history is mythology. And when you realize that the U.S. did not fight communism, when you realize that Tsar Nicholas and Rasputin were good guys, the entire history of the 20th century has to be rewritten. But the problem is, if people were to believe this, if people were to understand, you know, how radical, how wrong they were, first of all, no one likes to admit that they're wrong.
Exactly.
And this would make them outcasts. I mean, who could ever be a normal guy again if you believe this? Once you realize, you know, all this stuff is true, you know, that Hitler wasn't a bad guy, that Hitler was the only reason that Western Europe exists today, because he invading the Soviet Union broke their offensive plans in Central Europe. And regardless of what you think about Hitler, you need to realize that he's the only reason that Stalin didn't invade. Major General Grigorenko, who became the highest ranking dissident in Soviet history, said that there was an invasion plan and that he was part of it. And this is why there were millions of men on the border of Central Europe with no barracks to house them. There was only one reason for that. This is why Hitler was able to surround millions of men when he invaded the Soviet Union. Everything people know is a myth. Think they know is a myth. You know, I could go on. But, you know, Rasputin is essential as far as the revolution is concerned and the murder of Tsar Nicholas, because they needed a chink in the armor, so to speak. Tsar Nicholas could not be touched because of his popularity, so they used Rasputin. And the fabrications about him, that he had a relationship with the empress, that he was drunk, that he was a cultist, all this stuff is utter nonsense. But he did have one political opinion, one, and that was don't enter World War I. And so the British, realizing this, needed him gone. And so they organized his murder. He had one political opinion: do not enter World War I. You're not going to come out of this. And it was Tsar Nicholas's greatest mistake. But let me tell you something. It wasn't even Tsar Nicholas. It was the Duma, the elected Duma, that was screaming for war. Mm-hmm. He was iffy about it because his cousin was – Kaiser Wilhelm was his first cousin. And they knew each other, and he was very pro-German. His wife was German. So this was the Duma. This was the Democrats, so to speak, that were screaming for World War I, not Tsar Nicholas.
The Dumians. Yeah, there's a lot here, more here than meets the eye, you know, going back scripturally. You could see the cookie trail now going back really millennia to the time of Christ and prior to his time, who the enemy really has been, and how they metamorphosized from one front group to another. You see, this whole business in the 1960s and 70s, we started hearing about how they were taking over the media, the Wall Street Journal and so forth, with this business of the neocon, the neoconservative. And there was this big debate, neocon or paleocon? You know, are you a paleocon or are you a neocon? Well, this is what they were doing. They weren't conservative, you know, the crystal family and so forth in the traditional sense, but they had a role to serve. They had a purpose to serve, as you point out, and that was to use one enemy to destroy another. You know, my enemy's enemy is my friend. And this is the way this whole evil regime in Jerusalem operates today. You know, they have new friends in Arab countries all of a sudden that they've tried to destroy and kill and have largely over the years, because they're dividing and they're conquering and they're working again against the Persians today, you know, the Iranians. So it's amazing how they can change and metamorphosize and just do all of these things that, you know, we just talked about going back all of these centuries, Matt. It's amazing. Same people, essentially, just a different time. That's all, a different era.
Well, we all know that the 19th degree of Freemasonry is their consecration to Lucifer. That's in Manly Hall's book. That's in, you know, Manly Hall's Secret Teachings of the Ages. That's in J.S.M. Ward's Freemasonry. And as you know, it says, I hereby promise the great spirit of Lucifer, prince of demons. Each year I'll bring him a human soul. That's in the 19th degree. And so when you and this is French and English. And these are the people that Peter brought in. These are the people that Catherine II brought in. And one of the reasons that Tsar Nicholas and his father, Alexander III, were so popular was that they were seen as repudiating this. They were seen as going back to a much older model. And even during World War I, even during the war, the Russian economy was growing. With a very large population growth. Great Britain, the Masons in London had one obsession in the 19th and the early 20th century, and that was to control Russian growth. So when the Turkish Empire was falling apart, the British financed it. They commanded its armies. They made sure it didn't. And because they knew if it fell apart, Russia would be the primary victor. So to believe that Russia and Britain were ever allies, like they formally were in World War I, is a lie. The point of being a member of the Entente was just to make sure that Germany and Russia fought one another. It was a diabolically genius plan to get rid of monarchs who were stronger than capital. When the government, like you have in Putin today in Russia, is stronger than the wealthy billionaires who used to run the country. In America, billionaires run the country. In Russia today, they don't.
Who do you think of today as equal to Tsar Nicholas and men of his stature in Europe and in America today? But I mean, particularly if you find any left in Western Europe, or particularly in history here in the United States, who do you think was the among some of the more statesmanlike potentates here? Do you see anybody who was considered to be a real major thorn in the side of these criminals?
Well, of course, it's Vladimir Putin.
Here in the United States, too.
Oh, well, other than you?
other than me. No, I mean, as far as presidents, you know, previous presidents, leaders, and so forth, anti-Masonic people in the United States, some of the people in the 1800s and so forth, they don't come up to mention much. They're probably insignificant in the minds of most people because they've even ever heard of them. But can you think of any who were real thorns in the side of the bankers and had to be eliminated?
Well, there was one group that I spent a lot of time worrying about, and that's the anti-federalists at the time of the drafting of the Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were extremely radical. They were, you know, Shays Rebellion and the Whiskey Rebellion in Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. You know, many of the Federalists, Alexander Hamilton especially, you know, were working for the regime. And, you know, they wanted this centralized empire. And the Anti-Federalists had rejected it. And the Anti-Federalists realized that the Constitution had so many holes in it that if it's passed, you know, the states are going to lose their power, which was exactly what happened. The Anti-Federalists predicted judicial review. They predicted the isolation of government leaders. They predicted the rule of billionaires. In the 1780s, they predicted this. And they were always right. And unfortunately, the Federalists won. And we realized that, you know, everything that they said would come true came true. Now, more modern time, well, far from perfect, Richard Nixon was probably the last president who actually knew anything. He was a legitimate intellectual. He knew foreign affairs. He blew, you know, Kennedy away in the stolen election in 1960. I think 1960 was a watershed in American politics. And they had to destroy him after he annihilated McGovern in 1972, humiliating. And he wasn't much of a conservative. But in terms of foreign policy, he was an outsider. He hated the Soviet Union. And it's possible in the U.S. that the government can be different from the ruling class. The ruling class is a regime, your capitalists, certain politicians. But during Vietnam, you had the ruling class being opposed to the government. You can't have that in monarchies. You can't have that in Russia today. You can't have that in the Soviet Union. The ruling class was the government. But that's not so much the case. And Nixon, to some extent, even Trump, during the Vietnam War, the ruling class was violently opposed to Vietnam. And this is why you had a massive anti-war movement then, but you don't have a massive anti-war movement now. Because this is why, you know, hating the military was something that you did all the time back then. You have to worship them now. But the only difference is the nature of the enemy. So Richard Nixon, you know, he knew the score. He knew about the Jews. He knew about all this stuff, and he had to go. He wasn't supposed to win 1960. They tried to rig the election, just like in Trump's case, and he still won. You know, ideologically, he left a lot to be desired. But he was probably the last president who was a real intellectual and somewhat of an outsider in terms of foreign policy. And they got rid of him in such a stupid way. You know, Watergate was such a ridiculous thing to pin on him. He knew he was going to destroy McGovern. Why would he need to cheat? You know, it's nonsense. So, you know, otherwise, you know, the anti-federalists, you know, there aren't many. You know,
about the anti-Masonic party? You know, the party going back to the 1800s, anti-Masonic party.
Well, I read John Quincy Adams, who, of course, was the presidential candidate after his own presidency, mm-hmm. and that movement. And really, you know, his letters against Freemasonry had nothing to do with their beliefs. It was the fact that it was a secret society. And you can't have secret societies in a democracy. JFK said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
or any, you know, what they call democracy, you know. So it wasn't so much that he was concerned with Lucifer or any of this. His primary argument was that because they concentrate power, they were illegitimate, which is true as far as it goes. So John Quincy Adams, you know, really risked a lot in becoming head of that party after his own presidency. You could never have that today. And it's because of media control, the rise of the conglomerate, the robber barons. You can never have that today. Now, in Russia, Putin can – there's a video many of you have seen. Putin walks into a meeting of Oleg Deripaska, one of the biggest billionaires in the world, who owns the aluminum industry there. He was getting ready to leave the country to outsource it. Putin marches into his office and said, "You will not." And you should see them. They're scared to death of him. And he makes them sign a letter, contract, saying they're not going to leave the country and put all these people out of work. One of the richest men in the world is scared to death of this guy. And he forces them to sign this document. And then, because he's so scared, he's nervous, he walks away with the pen, and Putin looks at him and says, "Give me my pen back," as just a final gesture of contempt. Well, you could do that if you're stronger than capital. American politicians drool at that. They wish they could do something like that, but they're not stronger than capital. They're weaker than capital. The banks are the only reason that the U.S. government functions at all, because they're constantly sending them money. Russia doesn't have debt. They paid off their debt early. So this is, it's, you know, and you had no sanctions on the Soviet Union, but there's sanctions on Putin. Isn't that odd? Soviet leaders were never treated like Putin is today. So the enemy of the ruling class, we know, is one thing, and that's Christian nationalism. That is the enemy. Soviet leaders were treated very, very well by the American press as well as by the American ruling class. Putin is not. And that's the difference. And that's what makes all the difference here.
All right. Okay, that's interesting to ponder. Now, there's in addition to that, going back to Andrew Jackson, I want to get back a little bit to the 1800s. How do you feel about him? Have you done a lot of research on him?
That part of American history, you know, yeah, I know the basics. I don't claim to be an expert. He's known for being anti-bank, and he did an amazing job there.
Mm-hmm.
The Trail of Tears was not one of his. You know, the Supreme Court said you can't move these tribes. And Jackson said, "Screw you. How many divisions do you have?" And he did it anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but again, not that I'm, you know, a bleeding heart for these people, but, you know, it was the wrong thing to do. And so, but, you know, I don't deal with American stuff too much. You know, I deal with contemporary stuff. And
yeah, I understand.
And the anti-federalists. The anti-federalists are the fact that they predicted our present situation in the 1770s and 1780s. They predicted everything that we're talking about. I have a paper out on this. When I was at the Barnes Review, it was plagiarized by the late Joe Sobrin, and well, I'm plagiarized every day of my life. Yeah. There's whole websites that take from me. Brother Nathaniel takes everything on Russia from me, even using my own words. So, you know, I should take that as a compliment, I guess. But
yes, there is. There is a compliment.
So, you know, but the anti-federalists for an American, I'm not very pro-American. America is not a nation. It's a confederation of states. It's a bunch of nations. And I think for anything to really happen, it's going to have to fall apart.
Right.
It's going to have to go into its constituent elements, you know, Southern with Texas, the Pacific Northwest, whatever it is, fall apart. And then you may have some serious reform. And I think that's just a matter of time, because
how does Alexander Dugin fit into this equation?
Well, he's, I don't know where the press got the impression that he is an advisor to Putin. He never was. He probably writes above Putin's head, most people's heads. I've read everything Dugin's ever written in the original, in Russian. Most of his stuff is not translated. So unless you read Russian, you really can't have an opinion on the guy. He's a great writer. He's a great scholar. He's an old believer, religiously. So he's Orthodox, but a much older conception of it. Because few things of his have been translated, people have opinions based on nothing. Because they don't realize, you know, I know his whole corpus.
How do you feel about him, though, Matt?
Well, I'm a Eurasianist. I think Eurasianism is a great idea. And it's based around the alliance of Russia and China against the New World Order, which is exactly what the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the single most important institution in world politics today, because it institutionalizes all the anti-status quo countries at war with the New World Order.
All right, a great place to pause. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to open up the lines now to comment or question our guest again today. Matt Johnson, we welcome you now to get online and bring up with some questions, comments. Give us your thoughts quickly. Now.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
All right, folks, we're back now. Rick Adams Uncensored, and of course, Matt Johnson has been on with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, and also I am on one of his upcoming programs coming up shortly now, and you can join by going to his site, www.andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. And don't forget Rick Adams, the Deadly Experiment on the YouTube channel. Join in, and we will be posting again very shortly. So you catch a load if you haven't caught up. All right. Now, we're going to go to the phones, Matt, and see what our listeners have to ask or say. First off, we have Fred in Michigan up. Hello, Fred. You're the first call.
Hey there, Rick. Okay.
Yes, question or comment? Go ahead.
Yeah, both. There's a former Roman Catholic Jesuit, Douglas Gabriel. Rick, I hope you checked him out sometime. You may even want to interview this guy. He's a very fascinating fellow. He used to work for NSA as well. In one of his installments regarding what you might call Cold War theater, he provided evidentiary proof that in a city outside Moscow, Skolnikov or Skolnikov, something like that, five big-time transnational corporations, including Raytheon, Intel, Microsoft, and others, about a decade or so ago, set up shop. It's a super high-tech R&D facility. And you may recall, Matt and Rick, that within the past couple of years, Putin laughed about any kind of a military retaliation because of his super advanced hypersonic missiles. And just so happens that it was those companies, particularly Raytheon, that developed that particular missile system for Vladimir. And secondly, there's a fellow, Brendan O'Connell, from Aussie land, who was arrested in his homeland of Perth about a decade ago when he organized grassroots resistance against the Talmudic Kabbalah Zohar Freemasonic takeover of Western Australia. So they hauled his butt into jail and attempted to beat him to death, and he managed to survive by the grace of Almighty Yahweh. So he survived, and now he's been producing, with the assistance of some stellar, intrepid super sleuths, a number of amazing revelatory videos on YouTube, one of which is called Cold War Theater. Cold War Theater, Brendan O'Connell. And he proves that Vladimir and the trumpet man and Bibi Netanyahu, they're basically three boys. He calls them the three Rothschild Talmudic sons of the city of London. They all have a major role to play, and it is a world stage. It is a Talmudic Oded Yanan Greater Israel globalist agenda stage. So,
Listen, because of time, we don't have that much time, Fred. You know, we don't have all day. So, let's pause here, stay on the line, and let Matt respond to what you've just said so far, right?
Sure. I'm not familiar with either argument except the second one, which you really have to be incredibly stupid to believe. The New World Order has sentenced Putin to death. There's a massive military buildup against him. There's massive sanctions on him. He is ripped apart in the elite press. He finances, or prior to the invasion, Russia financed Iraq. Putin finances Hamas. Putin finances Syria. Putin's at war with the U.S., essentially, in Syria. Putin trades with North Korea. I don't know what this man has to do to show that he is absolutely at war with these people, not one with them. Normally, Rothschild family doesn't invade those that it's profiting from. Putin just nationalized the Russian central bank. And he did this because he is going to drop the dollar as the main currency for energy trade.
All right, we have to take a break here now, and we'll come back. All right, we have more calls just ahead and limited time, so we'll be back with Matt Johnson and give your opinions, and we'll have quite an exchange. All right, continue in just a few minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner.
Center. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Whatever needs to be done, we gotta do ourselves.
All right, we're back now, and I don't know, is Fred still with us here on the line?
Yep.
Okay, Fred's gone. All right. By the way, the chat room that I use here on this program has been set up. You can definitely avail yourself to it, and many of you are. So you can do that at any time, and you will be able to enjoy some of the conversation that we have. Some people have sent me some information having to do with the videos concerning Moscow, Tel Aviv, and New York, Zionist Axis by Brendan O'Connell, who just came up to mention, the Russian communist, I believe it's the pedigree, I'm sorry, of Israel. And, you know, a lot of this is coming up more and more now. One of the things, Matt, that, you know, you mentioned just a moment ago before I give out the name again of what we're doing here as far as the forums, has to do with Putin. And as you say, what need Putin need to do to prove he's against this New World Order, as you say. But why, let me ask you this, why will he not come out and repudiate his family, his father, his nation, the Soviet dictatorship in World War II, and how he speaks glowingly of the slaughters committed by the Red Army? You know, Netanyahu, Putin, and others were just in Moscow celebrating on May Day this glorious revolution. How do you account for that, some people are asking?
Are they asking why Putin doesn't praise Hitler?
No, they're asking why does Putin not repudiate the Red Army? That's what they're saying.
Well, he's repudiated the Soviet Union over and over and over and
but
over.
But the Red Army, not the Soviet Union now, the deeds of the Red Army, he considers it, or supposedly anyway, the translation we're getting is that it's a glorious thing, killing millions of Germans and killing millions of others, the Japanese.
Well, as far as World War II is concerned, the so-called victory in World War II is extremely popular. It's really, really hard to be pro-German there. Even though there's National Socialism everywhere, it's really not a pro-German one. It's very, very popular. It was seen at the time as a patriotic war, not a war for the Soviet Union.
Well, what about now? All this glasnost and all this reform and all of this speaking out and all of the unveiling of the sins of the past. I think people are looking for an explanation as to why. How can he rub shoulders with Netanyahu?
Because he's president of a country. What's he supposed to do, punch him in the nose?
Well, you don't have to meet with him. People are saying you don't have to get together with him, though. You don't have to hug him and kiss him.
That's not how world politics works.
That's why politics is one thing, but, you know, statesmanship is another, isn't it?
Listen, when Netanyahu comes to...
No, I'm throwing this up for sake of argument because I think it's part of an academic discussion.
This is what I do every day of my life. I know exactly what you're saying. And the answer is really simple. Yeah. He's a politician. He's outplayed the West over and over again. When Netanyahu
can we trust any politicians now and then?
Well, so far his record is good. He supports. He's financed the Iranian army. He's financed the Syrian army. He's an enemy of Israel. He supports Hamas and Hezbollah, and recognizing their victory in their elections in the West Bank. But Netanyahu goes there, you know, as a suppliant. He comes to America as an owner. And he's so damn popular, not only in Russia, but globally, that he better be nice to him.
What do you think of this upcoming summit, then? What's your opinion on the 16th, at least right now?
The one in Finland, I don't know.
In Finland with Trump and Putin. So.
Well, Trump has to worry about being too nice to him. I have the feeling he's going to be harsher than he needs to be because he desperately wants the press to leave him alone.
Mm-hmm.
And this incredibly stupid hacking thing, which had nothing to do with actual computer hacking, and I've read the NSA report, it's just RT, and people like me are the ones who are, you know, affecting voters. So it had nothing to do with computer hacking. He's probably going to be harsher than he needs to be, hopefully to get the press off his back, because he really is being attacked like no other president in history has ever been attacked.
So who is directing this new economic nationalism at this time? China, Russia, the United States. Trump didn't think this up by himself. You know he can't do that. So
Trump doesn't know anything about politics.
He doesn't know anything about very much of history either. But
no,
still, who's directing this? I mean, I know, but I'm just saying, who are the pioneers of this administration's new sudden surge of American economic nationalism?
Well, I don't know if you're looking for names. I don't know. You mean in America?
Well, policy wise, foreign policy.
I mean, even people like Pat Buchanan, who said that, you know, free trade is destroying this country.
Yeah.
I have no problem with him slapping tariffs on China.
Yeah, but what industry do we have left? I think people, even Pat Buchanan acknowledges that the synagogue of Satan has taken our industry and basically our steel industry that is most vital has basically diluted it overseas. So are we not being more vulnerable now at this particular time?
There's really not a we. You know, I have nothing to do with, you know, whatever. The U.S. has to go.
Right.
You know, that. So there's no we. But you're right. The U.S. has no real economy other than consumption.
Right.
And services. There can't be, unless industry comes back, unless you know, foreign investment is challenged and taxed as it should be, then, you know, but as far as the globe is concerned, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the fighting. This is why, you know, there really can't be any war with Russia or China, because they have a military alliance. Mm-hmm. The U.S. can't beat the Taliban in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. You imagine them up against those two armies. So it's, you know, the U.S. has lost every battle it's had.
And I think purposely, too, as I've told you before, and you admitted, you came back and you said one time, you said, you know, I've been thinking about that, that we are destroying ourselves, not because it's just an inert thing or an accident or it's just a free fall, but it's part of the destruction of America going back to the time of the investigation of the tax-exempt foundations of the 50s and so forth, when we were told they were working to create a convergence worldwide, you know, bring down America, bring up the third world, and have that globalist union. So, I mean, these battles are not meant to be won. Communism was, as we say, a farce. The whole business of fighting communism was the exact opposite of the truth.
And the same thing for Islam. I mean, the U.S. supports Islam, too. It was one of the most brilliant comments you've ever made.
Because, well, I didn't think it was brilliant, but I just
it changed. It really changed my thinking. And because you absolutely, you said the context was, I said, well, the U.S. can't really get involved in a war over there because it's going to lose. It always loses.
Yeah.
And you said, wait a minute, the point isn't to win. And I went, oh my God, that's a damn smart thing to say. It's true.
I always think of it as the enemy at the gates, but the enemy within is our friend, so to speak. Our government, this government, and those who control it, I've always said, is our worst enemy. Our worst enemy, you know.
But, you know, the U.S. military, you know, I'm very anti-military, and I have a lot of papers out on this. They can't be blaming politicians. You know, they lost fair and square.
Politicians are nothing but useless.
Yeah, they're there to blame stuff on, you know. But the U.S. military is an utter disaster. Wherever it goes, it loses, including in the first Iraq war was a loss for the U.S., believe it or not, which is a separate issue. So they can't, you know, have soldiers blaming everybody else but themselves really seems like a non-soldierly thing to do. But so you're right to say that these yo-yos, I think was the word you used, joining the military because they have no other economic option.
Right.
And going into a war where they're going to be killed or humiliated or something else with incredible incompetence. I mean, that, you know, about half of the Navy aviation can't fly right now. Where's all this flipping money going? Russia just cut its military budget by 20%, and yet still can't outclass the U.S. on any level.
And this one is growing by leaps and bounds while Americans starve.
Well, the you know, I read a lot of Russian military blogs, because of course I read the language, and they really make fun of the U.S. I mean, these guys are so overpaid and so pampered. I'm talking about the officers, not the grunts.
Yeah.
You know, six figures, mid-level officer, tax-free.
Right.
And they really, they're there for the economics. They're there for the prestige. They're not there for, because they're patriots. And when Russians go to an American base to visit, they say, oh, my God. And they talk about the prostitutes. They talk about the Thai massages that they have there. Really, it's really disgusting. And they're just and they're, the U.S. incompetence in warfare is and equipment failures. And the last few months, their planes are falling out of the sky. They're crashing everywhere. The U.S. Navy has just this year has crashed into two Japanese fishing boats. What the hell's going on here? They're just incompetent. And, you know, they're picking fights with China and Russia in two different theaters. And they can't beat the Mujahideen in the Middle East. You know,
that's how you bring this country to its knees. And that is a scriptural thing. They're destroying what this nation has become and what it's always known as, a real New Jerusalem. They want to destroy America, the whites, the middle class, and it's clear to me that they're doing a pretty good job of it. Now, our chat room, of course, you want to get on Chatango, the deadly experiment, or just plain deadly experiment, one word, .chatango.com. All right. You know what? I've been doing too much talking here, Matt, so let's bring up our callers and let's get right to the point, folks. All right, Mark in Louisiana first. Hello, Mark. You're up with Matt Johnson.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. One of the, I think the greatest feat of the masters of deception, the purveyors of death and destruction, you know, second to none, you know, in history, was the campaign, propaganda of lies for about 10 years incessantly by all their forces against Serbia in order to destroy, you know, Yugoslavia, split it apart, and take it over.
All right. Nationalist movement.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. He's absolutely correct.
He is.
You had a situation whereby they managed, because of their incessant 24 hours a day propaganda, they managed to get just virtually the whole population of the United States and the world, you know, in Serbia, you know, when it was all lies. And the people behind it is 100% Jews, 100%, 100%, not 1 million less than that.
He is 100% right. Essentially what happened was that the Albanian drug dealers hired Ruderfin, which is the PR firm in New York, and gave them millions of dollars to plant stories and everything else. Slobodan Milosevic refused to counter this. He refused to put out his own propaganda until it was too late. And then in his so-called trial, he is absolutely blowing these people away. I mean, we've all read – I've read all the transcripts. They turned his microphone off, and they eventually kill him in prison. And because Milosevic was exposing all this stuff, exactly what this man is saying, they made sure that people like Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein were dead before they can. So they will never, they'll never put anyone on trial again because Milosevic was destroying his cross-examiners.
Well, at least we know the Bushes are honest, though, right?
Of course.
Yes. Well, what doesn't cease to amaze me, even though it's been almost 20 years ago, is that they managed to get the so-called liberals, the conservatives, the Republicans, the Democrats, the socialists, the atheists, the evangelicals, you name it, the John Birch Society, the Masons, the Muslims, just about everybody in this country to believe all the lies. How
well, my
can
friend,
you do that?
Have you ever heard of
Johnson's
Law? How
can you do that unless you are allied with the devil himself?
You're
How can you do
correct.
That?
Are
okay,
you
thank
with-
you. Thank you very much, Mark. Okay. We have to let him respond and then take another call. Thank you.
Yes, I don't know if he's familiar with Johnson's Law. It's a law of social science that I discovered, named after myself.
Uh-huh.
And the law says that the more obscure the country, the more obscure the area, the more the press is going to lie about it and get away with it because there's so few people to correct them, either by inadvertent mistakes or by actual lying. No one knows a damn thing about Serbia in this country. They could say that the country is made out of cheese, and people would believe it.
Do you think they could even spell Serbia, honestly?
Well, certainly not Yugoslavia. And, you know, Albania is a country of nothing. It's based on prostitution, guns, and drugs. That's the entire economy. That's the World Bank says that. And yet they get loans from the IMF. They get aid money from the U.S. because they're anti-Serbian and thus anti-Russian. So all any criminal gang has to do to be considered a sovereign state by the United States is just say they hate the Russians or hate the Serbs or both. That's what Albania is, the first country in human history to essentially be a crime family that takes over a government. Yeah, that's all. That's their entire economy. They produce nothing. They don't grow food. It's running drugs from Central Asia to Europe and girls especially. And sometimes they're involved in fuel pilfering. It's a criminal state, and the largest military base of the U.S. outside of America is Camp Bondsteel in Kosovo. And it just so happens that Kosovo is sitting on top of trillions of dollars in gems and precious metals.
Yeah.
So, what the man said was absolutely correct.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have a great audience, a great scholars here. Mark in Georgia is next. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Mark.
Okay.
Yes, we can. Go ahead quickly.
Can you hear me? Okay, good.
Yes.
I want to be absolutely clear about something. I agree with the King of the Jews, and when the Greek word kai ouk means and are not, kai ouk, they call themselves Jews and are not. You understand why I coined the term swed, which is just Jews spelled backwards, because when I hear you people use the word Jew as a term of derision, it makes me cringe. Because I'm like, look, there are honorable Jews that don't know better. There are honorable Jews who are against Israel violating the rights of the Palestinians. And we don't want to impugn them by using the word Jew in a negative way. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't use that word. I use the word.
I'm not saying you personally. I'm not saying you personally. I'm saying...
No, I know, but that's why I specify Kenites. You see, those who are born of Cain's seed line and those who call themselves Jews. Now, there are many people who are
not... Yeah, I'm not saying you personally.
I'm not saying you personally. We understand that.
I just want to be clear that
you said that before, too, Mark. We understand
I just want people to be aware that the Zionists intentionally manufacture what they call anti-Semitism,
and I rebut.
Recently, I was banned on Quora because there were Zionists making complaints that I wasn't being nice. And I've tried to explain to this guy, I've spoken with the survivors of the USS Liberty myself, and no, I don't accept the official account because neither do the survivors who were actually there. And, well, the ship's log and the captain said it was an honest mistake, and it's like, whatever the captain said, he said under duress, and I tried to explain that to him. I tried to explain that whatever forgery the ship's log may have been was to prop up the official lie that Israel's our friend. And you notice they always leave out the part, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And what the part they always leave out is, for as long as it's mutually convenient.
Right, right,
that's not
exactly.
Friendship. You know, the enemy of my enemy is not honest friendship. Like George Washington said, you know, our motto should be honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. So when they say Israel's our friend, well, that thing that Bibi Netanyahu, and there's a reason I call him that, he said at one point, that once we've sucked America dry for all it can have, as far as we're concerned, it can dry up and blow away. And people who think that Israel is our friend, it's like, well, you can't fight that. It's like, well, I can't really prove that Bush said the Constitution was a GDP piece of paper, but his action said it a lot more loudly than any words he may have said, right?
Bingo, bingo. Yes, all right. Stop there. Stop.
In 1948, Israel was founded. The Soviet Union was a disaster. Of course, they just fought a war. And although their sympathies were with Moscow, they went to the U.S. because the U.S. could give them a much, much better deal. And the comment that they'll suck America dry is absolutely correct. I know Phil Turney's a friend of mine from the USS Liberty. He's right to bring it up. Anyone who believes that Israel's a friend of anyone is a fool. There are very few actual Talmudic Jews that are decent people. They're just Jews that haven't availed themselves of the network yet. Now, there's a few Karaites left, which traditionally don't come under the name Jew. He is right about something really important, though, that we use the word Jew and people get confused because what are we talking about?
Exactly.
In the New Testament, Jew, you know, the dentist up the street, you know, and they're very different groups of people and everything in between. So it's a very sloppy use of language. Unfortunately, everyone's using it, so it's very hard to, you know, I think Michael Hoffman uses the word Judean to refer to modern Talmudic Jews as a way to kind of solve that problem. And I think it's correct. Like, you know, as if modern Jews have anything to do with the Hosea or Micah.
They have nothing. Absolutely.
The Talmud opposite seed line.
Yep.
Exactly correct. Exactly correct.
All right. Let us go to our – sure. But for sake of time, so we can maybe get through a couple of more calls here. Donna in California. Let's see if we can bring her up. Donna, come on up with Matt Dunn.
Yes. Oh, hello. Very interesting conversation today.
Thank you. I think
we need to learn a lot about the history of Russia. It's very important. My question to your guest is Trotsky. Now, Congressman Ron Paul said that the neocons were former Trotskyites. What is your comment on that?
I already mentioned the neocons in Washington, D.C. Yeah, well, she may have tuned in a little later. Oh, just listen in.
It's very simple. Stalin and Trotsky were opponents, personal opponents, had nothing to do with ideology. And Trotsky was exiled and killed. It was seen by Jews as a Jew-Gentile fight in the Soviet Union. It was not, but that's how it was perceived. So supporters of Trotsky and the so-called old Bolsheviks ended up hating the Stalinist Soviet Union. In fact, they hated it so much that that they joined the so-called Cold War against it and became vehemently anti-Soviet. And that's how the neocons come from Trotsky. You know, Trotsky was no Marxist. He absolutely was not. He was a Jewish nationalist. He believes in simply sucking Russia dry or any other country that they're involved with. So it's an oversimplified timeline. But because of Stalin's murder of Trotsky and his purge of the old Bolsheviks, Jewish communists took that as an insult and became anti-Stalinist. And they invented the myth that Stalin was anti-Semitic, which he was not. Just so happens that all the old Bolsheviks were Jews.
It wasn't he was taken down, 1953, the year I was born. And then right after that, they began to begin the McCarthy era hearing to use Joe McCarthy as the fall guy for their own evil ambitions, you know, to oppose the Soviet Union, but at the same time actually help the communist advancement by destroying McCarthy. You see, this is how diabolical these people are. You know what I'm saying?
You're amazing. Absolutely correct. We're understating it, really. McCarthy was about to show what Sutton has already shown, that American capitalism is deeply involved in the Soviet Union, economically speaking. And he was on the verge of, because all, you know, all their primary documents, their receipts and everything, they're all in Sutton's book. These aren't secrets. And it's an open secret. And that, you know, and no historian will deny it. They just don't want to deal with it because it would mean changing everything that they believe and everything.
You can't let that house of cards collapse. That's what it is. Yes. All right. Thank you, Donna, for that good question. Again, for those of you who are saying we're repeating, it bears repeating, folks, over and over. This is a history class today, folks.
Well, the question caused me to have to repeat that.
Yeah, well, it should be repeated. This is a real academic setting, you know. This is not talk radio per se, you know, childish, foolish, mindless, silly talk radio. This is serious stuff, and that's why we do it. Let's see if we can take in Manny now in California before we run out of time, Matt. Hello, Manny.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, listen, speaking of history and questions, I have a couple of questions, then I want to make a couple of statements. Is it, where did Netanyahu go and get over 30 standing ovations? Did he go into the U.S. House of Representatives and get and make a speech and get 30 standing ovations? Did he do it in the Russian Duma? All right. And my next question is, if Putin and Trump are both owned by the same so-called powers or enemies that be, why is this so-called mainstream American media freaking out so much about the possible meeting between the two? All right. Now, as far as Netanyahu goes and being invited to Russia, I don't know if you remember the Victory Day parade, but Netanyahu tries to bull his way into Putin. An old Russian soldier is pushed out of the way as the parade is coming down. Putin steps away from Netanyahu, stops everything, pulls the Russian soldier, and he marches. He walks with Putin. And did you read Netanyahu's lips? It was F-U, F-U, the whole time Putin was doing this. How is that for a diplomatic? Go ahead.
Okay. No, the caller is, I forgot about that. You're absolutely right to bring it up. Standing ovations, of course, were in the U.S., and it was, and the caller's out, you know, and Putin has nothing. Look, being anti-Semitic in Russia is mainstream. It's in the Duma. It's on every newspaper. It's mainstream, unlike in America.
Well, the way they seem to portray it now in the Jewish press in Israel, I get it every day, and there is not one edition where they do not say anti-Semitism, as they call it, is everywhere. It's under beds, it's in closets, it's everywhere. Even in Israel, they're destroying themselves, ironically. It's really an amusing process in one sense. But hey, you know what, Matt, we're out of time. Go to Matt's site, and let's see if we can make some donation to Matt. At the same time, help Republic Broadcasting. How's that, Matt Johnson?
We both deserve it. We really do. Thank you, Rick, as always.
Thank you, Matt Johnson. Always a pleasure. Okay, we'll talk again. Folks, we're out of time. RussJournal.org, okay? Rick Adams saying goodbye, and may Yahweh bless his elect.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.